Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Malcolm Penn, CEO of Future Horizons. Malcolm is a contributor to SemiWiki and a frequent podcast guest. Welcome back, Malcolm.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's good to be back.
Yeah, a new year. I'm really excited. So let's talk about your upcoming industry update webinar. I put a link to it in the introduction. It's on January 17th at 3 p.m. London time, which is 7 a.m. Pacific time, California time, my time. And of course, you'll have a replay made available shortly thereafter, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, I look forward to it. How many have you done?
Oh my gosh, this is our 33rd year. We used to do it just twice a year, but last year we've introduced a mid kind of update as well, because a lot happens. So we do it in January and in May and in September. And it's just really, our main forecast is always done in January, and that's the one we kind of nail our colors to the mast on. And we don't kind of change that outlook, but we do update it to say, well, this is what we said was going to happen, and this is what's actually happening. We're on track or we're slightly off track. But we use the January as the benchmark and then track what happens from there on out.
Right. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. So on our previous podcast, we discussed 2022 and, you know, a potential semiconductor crash. So let me ask, you know, what happened, Malcolm, and why? You know, what was it, the war in Ukraine, the China lockdown for COVID, excess inventories, combination thereof? I mean, let's go into some detail here.
Yes, sure. But I think as you, I mean, you recall quite vividly, I think that this time last year, we were saying that we were very worried about 2023, because we believed that the market was going to slow down in the second half of 2022 and that it would crash in 2023. And we came out with our rather negative forecast, a 22% decline for next year. And that opened a few eyebrows indeed, because at the time, this time last January, the whole industry was really going flat out like gangbusters. And the last thing on anybody's minds was that there would be a slowdown. But there's been really two factors at play, really. The first is the kind of the fundamental heartbeat of the industry, its DNA, which says it is still cyclical, despite some of the rhetoric to the contrary of that there. It is cyclical because it's driven by the fundamental economics of the mismatch between supply and demand. Demand being quite fickle, can vary very abruptly, up and down, whereas supply is on a very long 2 to 3 year lead time, and that's very hard to change and alter that. So getting these things to marry together is really impossible. So what made us come up with our projection that we would see a slowdown in the second half of last year was simply the fact that supply would catch up with demand. And because demand was overheated because of the long lead times, double ordering, ordering for just in case rather than just in time, then there would be this mismatch and the supply would catch up and overtake demand, and that would then cause the market to slump. And that indeed is what did happen as it happened. But on top of that, you had the war in Ukraine, you had the ensuing energy crunch that came from that, the rapid increase in gasoline prices, in electricity prices, in natural gas prices, which kind of put a squeeze on consumer spending and really took a hit at the smartphone market, the consumer market, the PC market. And they took a really heavy hit. They're always the first to fall. They took a heavy hit, and that just amplified the slowdown of in the actual overall market itself. So those two factors combined. And June last year, we saw the market really come. It just hit a brick wall. It collapsed in that single month. And it's been kind of slugging its way down since that time frame.
So a lot of people in the industry believe that the chip market is different this time around. In fact, I'm one of those people. This new market we have is less volatile, you know, given the industry's enormous reach into all sectors of the economy and across a much wider range of products. You know, semiconductors are everywhere. Do you agree with this more stable now viewpoint? or, you know, how do you see the different sectors affected differently in the coming months?
Yeah, I mean, the industry is kind of, the more it changes, the more it stays the same. And certain parts of it really don't change, but other parts of it, of course, are very different because it is increasingly broader across a much wider range of segments, the much wider range of technologies. And so those can counter effect each other. They can offset each other. Not all markets behave in the same time frame. They don't all march together at the same time. And so you find that on the one hand, the memory, the PC and the consumer markets tend to be a little bit more fickle. And so if you've got all of your eggs in that basket, you're going to feel the pain a lot more than someone that's maybe in an industrial market sector or even the automotive sector, and where the lead times are much longer, the requirements are much stricter, the approval requirements take a lot more effort. So there's less supply pressure. So where the supply and demand dynamics are much more kind of volatile, that those changes happen quite quickly. But you have all these markets, geographic and end market applications, and they don't all work in the same time frame. They do offset each other. And the more you have of them, the more chances there are of that stabilizing effect. So I think that the peaks and troughs that we've had in the past are definitely not as strong as they were in the past. But the fact remains is if you do get into an overcapacity situation, then that segment will collapse because you simply run out of wafer starts to bring in there because people are cutting back. And the first thing people do when they got no wafer starts is to bomb the price to try to fill the fab at any cost whatsoever. And the industry can do that. So it's natural. It's part of the DNA, and you can't really avoid that happening. But automotive, for example, is still doing incredibly well. And a lot of that is driven by the move to EV, of course. A lot of it is the pent-up demand for cars. Particularly when you remember back in COVID, we couldn't buy cars. We weren't allowed to leave our homes. We couldn't go to a car showroom. So for 3 months or more, maybe more, that market stagnated, and that built the demand up, stashed that demand. And in the meanwhile, we're working from home, so we're saving on commuting costs. So we were getting quite cash rich positive at that point there. We couldn't spend our money on anything. So cars became even more attractive. So I think that built up demand is there. The biggest concern that I have with the car industry is that if the global economy starts to become under a lot more pressure, if companies start to lay off people or they start to cut back, then one of the first things that does cut back is people's discretionary spending on cars, because maybe they're worried about losing their jobs. Maybe they're still worried about putting food on the table because of high inflation. So it's at risk. But that risk won't really start to show itself until next year, if it's going to show itself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I helped two of my children buy cars over the last couple of years, and it was a different experience for sure. You know, we didn't have a choice of color and features. You know, there are much fewer cars on the lots these days. And I actually see that continuing because that's a much better thing for the automotive industry. And, you know, the big change I've seen over the last few years is that me working in the trenches is, you know, doing chip design and such, is we're dealing with more systems companies directly rather than fabless companies, right? So, you know, Apple started it, but now Google and the big cloud companies are making their own chips, and they're not, you know, buying chips from NVIDIA or Intel, as many chips, you know, from all these other fabless guys. So we're dealing with systems companies, and the automotive guys are making their own chips now. We see this on SemiWiki. You know, we see 200,000 different domains looking at IP and foundries and EDA, and it's really a big shift. And when you're working with systems companies, you're that much closer to the customer, right? Because you're not involved in a big supply chain. And, you know, one of the reasons why system companies are doing this more now is because of the supply chain problems, right? They couldn't get chips. So now they're going to have control over their silicon. But that's a big change for our industry. And, you know, that's why I think maybe the cycle might be a little different. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think that to me is the nuclear change. I mean, that is really, really, you know, the single biggest change that the industry is facing, because that whole sector of chip sales is now no longer part of the normal TAM. So it is simply the end customer going straight to a foundry, mostly TSMC, and that's out And that's a huge sector because these guys are working at the leading edge. So that's a real sea change, and that's going to change the industry quite dramatically.
Yeah, and those guys spend a lot of money. You know, I've done a couple projects with Google and such, and they have a different view of chip design. You know, it's not, oh, we have to do it on the cheap. It's, hey, let's get the best chip out, you know, in the best amount of time, so our products will be, you know, very competitive. And boy, they write some big checks. But, you know, it still looks like the chip market in this year anyway will be back to single digit growth. I mean, we're a single digit growth industry. You know, we had 1 year of 26% plus growth, which, you know, is ridiculous for us, and now we're adjusting for that. But you know, what are we going to be like in 2023 moving forward? You know, 2023 could be negative, which you mentioned last year. You know, when do you see the market bottoming out, and what shape is the recovery going to be? You know, is it a U, is it a V, is it a hockey stick? You know, what are you going to tell us on the 17th? Give us a preview.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I think when you look at them, first of all, the second half of last year is negative compared with the first half of last year. So the downward momentum is in a negative mode. And most of the outlook for the first half of 2023 is again showing a decline, a contraction in the industry itself. So when you start off on that momentum and look at how that momentum is likely to roll forward, it's very hard to come up with any number that isn't negative. And there's kind of two schools of thought at the moment. One is a very low, benign kind of negative number, -4, -6, something like that. And the second one, which is really where I'm probably more positioned, is that it will be a little bit more dramatic than that, that there will be a lot of pain, and it could go into the double digit routine. We said -22 last year. I haven't yet really crunched the numbers because I'm waiting for the next set of WSDS data to come out over this weekend to see what the fourth quarter was really looking like. But it's hard to roll through anything other than negative overall. But the question then is, when does it turn? And traditionally, you'd expect to see this market turning by the middle of next year. That's when the whole process works its way through the system. You get through the inventory correction, because you have to remember, Dan, we were buying 60% more units than we needed, simply to keep that supply chain filled up. When you're on a 50-week lead time for parts, where the average is probably 8 to 10 weeks, then you're having to buy inventory to keep that whole product line going. So we got to compensate for that. That should be done by the second quarter, moving into the third quarter, which is great timing because the third quarter is typically a seasonally strong quarter. So you should have that nice coincidence of a market demand increasing slightly from a systemic point of view, just at the time when the inventory and the capacity comes into balance. So that should set us off for a reasonable second half of the year, which means that 2024 will definitely be a positive year, whether it's single digit or it won't be double digit, but it could be medium single digit. And that's something which it looks like it will be. But I don't think there's any escape from the fact that 2023 is going to be negative, particularly when you look at what's happening in the more macroeconomic sense of the world. There's nothing there out there that's going to grab it by the coat strings and pull it up.
Right. You know, in my numbers, how I look at things, it's logic only. You know, I don't cover the memory market. I really don't understand it as much. But I believe the memory market is dragging the industry down, at least currently, right? Because the memory market is crashing. But on the logic side, you know, it's much more promising. So, you know, your and I numbers are not quite going to match because I'm just logic. But, you know, memory is a different beast, right?
Memory is definitely much more volatile. It is 100% commodity, and it is very volatile. It's hugely dependent on a limited number of market sectors. So, but then on the other hand, memory is like the Parkinson's law. Okay, it's insatiable. You know, it just fills the amount of money you got to spend on it. So the demand is there. And so I don't see that happening there, but the price is what happens. The price has collapsed. And on the one hand, I mean, the bad news on the memory side is that Samsung, for example, is committed to keep on investing in this downturn there, which is the absolute right thing to do, But of course, it doesn't help with the overall long-term capacity. But they're going for market share and dominance, and good luck. I mean, that's the right thing to do.
Right. Well, I think one of the driving forces for the logic side is AI. You know, there's going to be AI on every chip, in my opinion, at some point of AI. And AI eats up memory, by the way. So I know we're going to have a big memory demand, but I think there's just more, you know, peaks and valleys in the memory business. But, you know, with logic, so TSMC grew more than 40% this year. We don't have the exact number, but it's in the 40% range. UMC grew 30%. And, you know, the forecasts for next year are coming out, but I think they're going to be double digit for sure. On the EDA side, you know, Synopsys had a record year. Cadence has a record year. And you know, these EDA companies used to be, you know, stealing business from each other, you know, not increasing the pie. But the pie is increasing dramatically now that they're working with these systems companies. You know, as I said, the system companies are buying the majority of the tools and IP now. And they have a lot more needs. And, you know, EDA companies are going upstream and they're broadening the total pie or the total market. And so, you know, we're seeing double digit growth in EDA, which, you know, I've been in EDA for 40 years. That's not the norm. But I think that might continue because of the systems companies. But, you know, isn't that an indication that the semiconductor market really is different now and that the downturn won't be as broad and as severe as, you know, some people think?
Well, I think yes and no. Okay. I mean, yes, it is different because of these system companies. That wasn't really there before. Only Apple was the big guy that was doing that kind of thing. And you can see why TSMC is benefiting from that and why they're able to outpace the market so dramatically is because they are the foundry of choice when it comes to these system companies. So to a certain extent, you've got this parallel world developing. And TSMC is king of that world, and good luck. I mean, they deserve it. They've done a super job. They do service that market extremely well. So I think, yes, that's keeping logic, and that does spin over to the EDA companies. But, you know, even other chip companies, when you're in a recession, you double down on R&D. So the EDA companies are always counter-cyclical. If the semiconductor market crashes, they do good because people have to spend money on R&D to move ahead of the game. Research tends to slow down in a market boom because you're so busy making the parts for people, you can't focus on the new designs. But when you're in a bit of a slowdown there, all effort goes on the new design. So certainly EDA is the beneficiary in these kind of circumstances.
Yeah, that's very true, very true. So let's talk about the supply chain. The chip shortage has triggered both a spurt in new factories as well as a move to reduce dependency on offshore facilities. You know, everybody's onshoring. You know, if we built the fabs, every fab that has been announced, we're going to have a huge capacity issue. You know, we have the issues with mainland China and Taiwan. The U.S. has also significantly tightened the depth and the reach of sanctions on China. I mean, what's your view on this, and how is it going to impact the industry moving forward?
Well, thank heavens we won't build all those fabs. I don't think we will. I mean, hopefully common sense will come into play that chip companies won't excessively overbuild when they know that they will just simply be shooting themselves in the foot by building capacity that no one wants. And we've been through that before. We know what the pain of that's like. And you don't really want to go through that. And I think the consolidation and the concentration in the industry will kind of hopefully hold that down a little bit and let a bit of common sense creep into the equation. And the likely is that these will be pushed out from their original time scale. They'll probably still happen, and you will get this relocation of factories more broadly dispersed around the world, which is probably a good thing. But there's always unintended consequences of that. And you know, maybe it won't be the TSMCs and the Samsungs of this world that will feel the pain, because they'll just simply build a fab in America or Europe or Japan or wherever it is. But it's possibly Taiwan as a country that won't get the benefit of that GDP. And so that's going to have potentially a negative impact on its economic growth. And that's the last thing it needs when it's got China breathing down its neck. So I think we have to kind of manage this in a very positive way. In terms of making sure that we're doing the right things, it's probably good that we got more geographic diversity, because the whole ethos is you don't have all your eggs in one basket. So that helps to balance the supply situation. But on the other hand, we can't do these changes too quickly because it took a long time to get to this level here. And it will ought to take a long time to unwind that position as well. But if we do build all those fabs, God help us.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, you know, we've had empty fab shells before, and we will have empty fab shells again. You know, I don't even think we have enough equipment to fill all these fabs. So,
exactly.
You know, the equipment industry, you know, TSMC actually pushed out some of their CapEx last year because they couldn't get equipment. And so, yeah, I think it'll all balance out. But I think we will have some nice, pretty new fab shells, but I'm not sure when we'll have actual equipment move in. But, yeah, you know, I agree with you. You know, I'm not worried about TSMC. They build fabs based on customer demand. They even get prepays and such, you know, but Intel, you know, is building fabs based on their dream or their desire, you know, to be a foundry and to be market dominated. You know, I heard the CEO said AMD's in our rearview mirror now, you know, which is pretty optimistic. And So I think there will be, you know, a little bit too much building with fab, but you're right. I mean, they're not going to move equipment in until they have some customers lined up. And so I think that'll be fine. But Malcolm, this has been a wonderful conversation. You are a great, great man, and we really appreciate your contribution here. And we'll definitely see you on January 17th for your next update, because you're right. The first one of the year is the big one. You tell people what are going to happen, and then you later in the year, you tell them what happened, right? So this is the key. This is the big one. So we'll see you then.
Thank you very much, Dan. And again, much appreciate the chance to talk.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.